Hi everyone, welcome to Building a Better Sefton. We've got someone new on this morning. I'll let her introduce herself in a moment, but you're very welcome, Lara. This is a new format. We're going to look at an international issue, a national issue, and a local issue. We'll combine those three together. So we're going to be talking about free speech in light of the Charlie Kirk assassination, and also look at local and national parties. Please like, subscribe. If you want to get involved, we write on Substack. We have a Facebook group. We're on YouTube as well. The more people who support us, the better. If you can contribute financially once a month for the price of a cup of coffee, that would be really appreciated in helping us get up and running. There'll be details in the notes with Crowdfunder and through coffee.com. And also you can subscribe at a paid level through Substack. And just like, subscribe, share, get involved. If you want to come and write for us, do some reporting for us, that's great as well. The more, the merrier as we expand. We're all about transparency, accountability, fact-based opinion and news across Sefton. And we're also very concerned about the rise of extremism, which we'll be covering in a moment. So thanks, everyone, for checking in with us. This is new, so let's see how it goes. So, Lara, I'm going to let you introduce yourself. How are you today?
Oh, good. Thank you. Hello. So I'm Lara, and I just spent the past 2.5 years being a councillor for Warwickshire District Green Party in Kenilworth in the Midlands, if you don't know it. And we have a nice castle there, Kenilworth Castle. Just moved up here where it's fresher and there's the beaches to Sefton. I'm starting my new political journey in these parts and looking forward to it.
Excellent. And you're welcome. Very, very welcome.
Thanks.
David, how are you and how's the weather today?
Yeah, no, the weather's really good. And here's Willow, in case you hear barking during the programme, it's not me. Okay, the weather's not too bad, but it could be better.
Could be a little bit better.
There's no storms, so it's good. No storms.
Yeah, although there are political storms brewing all over the world.
Absolutely.
We'll get to those in a moment. But Lara is new to Sefton, but she also lives in Formby. So we've now got representation in Bootle, Crosby, Formby. And we very much want the whole of Sefton represented as much as possible through our podcast. So without further ado, we're going to talk about free speech, particularly in light of the Charlie Kirk assassination. Now, there seems to be, we've let the dust settle with the Charlie Kirk assassination before we speak to it. There seems to be a big debate at the moment about whether Britain is a country that values free speech, whether the USA is backtracking on free speech, and a lot of debates about what free speech actually is. Just to give some historical context, Voltaire, the French philosopher, wrote during the Enlightenment that I may disagree completely with someone has to say, but I will defend to the death their right to say it. And Voltaire wrote that in times where you had oppressive governments who would restrict any opposition to their governments, namely absolutist France, where you had a king who could basically, or thought that they could do whatever they liked. So where are we today? How has that debate developed? We're going to get some opinions from David and Lara. Now, I personally believe anyone should be allowed to say whatever they want, but there are restrictions on that. So if you go into a crowded theatre and shout fire when there's no fire, I don't think that is good use of freedom of speech. I also think that if you encourage people to break the law and to persecute particular groups in society, what might be called hate speech, that is overstepping the mark. And that is what we call the UK interpretation. Whereas the American or US interpretation very much seems to be, you can say whatever you like and there shouldn't be any consequences whatsoever. So this is where we are at the moment. Now, Charlie Kirk was someone who said that freedom of speech was very, very important to him. And he literally said a lot of stuff, which I think was controversial and also I think was abusing free speech. And I'm not afraid to say that. So, David, Lara, have you got any reflections on free speech, particularly in light of Charlie Kirk and the current debates that are going on?
The Gary Neville one at the moment is a very interesting one because he's come out really criticising the flags. That's his, or the use of the flags, not the actual flag. He's criticising that, right, and using his free speech. But the people who are criticising him and telling him to shut up are the people who want to wave the flags and use their freedom of speech to promote their own anti-immigrant policy. We have in this country the idea that I'm allowed my free speech, but I don't want to hear anything that's different. Yeah. And I would say that we should be looking at how we have a dialogue with free speech. I was just going to quote J.K. Rowling with her anti-trans stand. Now, she's incredibly wealthy. She has many, many followers. So when she started her free speech on anti-trans, she was just posting on Twitter, and she had the money and the power and the following. Other people don't have that. It seems very unfair that some people's free speech is boomed around the world, like Charlie Kirk, and other people's isn't. Now, J.K. Rowling could have organised a trans conference. She could have had lead speakers from around the world. She could have televised it free. She could have said, this is how we use free speech. This is how we discuss. But she doesn't. She just uses social media. And I think that's the issue isn't so much free speech. It's the influence of the rich, how they manipulate social media, and how we're often silenced because of that.
Just on that, David, do you want to just say what Gary Neville said quickly? And just in case anyone's chanced upon this due to an algorithm, it wasn't in the UK. A lot of people are putting flags up on lampposts at the moment, the England flag. And some people have said that because they started on the far right, that it's trying to isolate and, if you like, intimidate minority groups. But what did Gary Neville said? He said something about the people who are very angry at the moment. Do you want to say it?
Yeah, well, I think also it would be really good if the listeners and viewers actually researched it themselves, because I think that's the trouble. We're relying on a soundbite, a sentence to get a whole topic. But basically, he was very critical of that. And then people are saying, well, what's he got to do with it? He's a footballer. He was trying to say that the flag should not be weaponized like this by the far right.
Absolutely.
And the far right are now saying, you shut up. I'm not going to subscribe to Sky now because you've attacked us. But they were quite happy to have their point of view, just not his.
Yeah. And Sky is the company that he works for, the media company that he works for at the moment. Lara, have you got any opinions on this?
Sorry, because you mentioned J.K. Rowling, and I was going to mention the flip side, which of her knowing that she had power and not using it in a way that maybe you or I agree with. On the flip side, you've got people like Lucy Connolly, who I think fundamentally she didn't realise the power that she had. You can put Lucy Connolly judge's remarks into your search engine and actually find the actual reasoning behind why she was imprisoned from the judge's perspective. The thing was, yes, it was just a tweet, used a lot of swear words, I'm just looking it up on my computer, about setting all the politicians on fire and all the people in the hotels. And then she went and deleted it about 45 minutes later. So she was already a high profile figure with followers. Her message was viewed 310,000 times and reposted 940 times. It exploded, it went viral. And how many people have copies of it and, you know, took screenshots. So although she deleted it because what she said was extremely powerful, and a lot of people saw it, and then people went and acted on it, and we had people trying to burn down her house. So, yes, I completely agree with you, Tim, that there should also adequate repercussions.
Yeah, I think that the Lucy Connolly thing, she encouraged people after the Southport murders to, like, attack the hotel, set them on fire for all, like, words along that line, along those lines, where a lot of asylum seekers were currently living, and it was on the back of a lot of dis and misinformation that was put out there about who performed the Southport murders and whether they were religiously motivated or whether they were a Muslim or not. And there was a lot of mis- and disinformation spread online. And I think there was an interesting reporter who got hold of Jess Phillips at the Labour Party conference and said, what do you think about Palestine Action being prescribed? And Palestine Action arranged protests, and they have sought to damage military equipment that will be used over in Israel against the Gazan people, etc. Although a lot of Labour politicians are saying, oh yeah, but our equipment isn't being used, we're just supporting the Israeli military in other ways. And Jess Phillips was asked, do you support the prescription of Palestine Action? And she said, yes, because I've seen intelligence. And then the woman said to her, would you have prescribed the suffragettes? Now, many people view the suffragettes as historically correct and on the right side of history, but there was a lot of opposition at the time. And we do need to think about this idea of when is it okay to break the law? Because we can talk about being allowed to have peaceful protest and say what you like to a degree, but it's when people overstep the mark, or even if a small minority of a group overstep the mark. To what extent do you think people should be able to challenge the law? And again, I'm throwing that open to either of you to comment.
I would say with Palestine Action that the intelligence that Labour have, or the top Labour people have, that no one else can see, and we must just completely trust, is because of some trials coming up. But they haven't happened, these trials. So people haven't been convicted. Now, if they were convicted, then you could say they are a terrorist group, right? But at the moment, you've just got accusations, and that's incredibly dangerous. If you've got a proven track record, right, that's one thing. But when we are seeing 90-year-old blind women and disabled people arrested by the police because they held a sign, and that's called breaking the law, you do have to wonder, is the law actually fit for purpose? Because we used to have laws that made it illegal to be gay. We used to, until 1931, we used to hang pregnant women in this country. Laws change. Laws change because hopefully we become more intelligent, more compassionate, more sensible. So currently, I think you can break the law and there will be consequences because you'll be arrested. Hmm. But at the heart of it, our government needs to make sure it's passing the correct laws. And I think Palestine Action is just demonstrating the very poor job Labour is doing.
Yeah, I think that protests should always be allowed to go ahead because the government needs to listen to the people, no matter what they're protesting about. But there is a difference between whether it's peaceful or right. Why are we arresting people standing around holding a sign or singing a song? It's insane. But if there's people acting violently and throwing Molotov cocktails into shop windows, then arrest those people, because obviously that's different.
I think with free speech and with political protest, there need to be consequences if you overstep the mark. And I think that that's an important thing. I think, like, historically, there are a lot of interesting examples, the ANC in South Africa, the suffragettes. Even the American revolutionaries, you know, broke the law because they were usurping the legitimate government, whatever that means. But I think when people push at the boundaries of what's legal, it often changes the legal system and it adapts. And that's part of what a healthy democratic society should be all about. So I think we're all agreed that there should be free protest. And I think if some people in an organisation choose to break the law and there are consequences for that, does that mean that the whole organisation should be banned and saying that you support that organisation? It means that you are considered supporting a terrorist organisation. It just seems to me that there's a narrative that some things are okay to do and some things are not okay to do, depending on what the government narrative of the time is. And I just want to say as well, I don't want to see what happened to Charlie Kirk happen to anyone. And there was a judge's house set on fire in the US the other day. who apparently is being obstructive to Trump. I read a terrifying article about these far-right groups in the US. And the reason that we look at the US is because they say when the United States sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. And it is symbolically meant to represent something. But the free speech thing in the United States at the moment, where my free speech is okay on the far right and I don't want any consequences, but effectively trying to close down everyone else's. For someone like J.D. Vance to be coming over here saying that you've got free speech issues because someone is not allowed to pray within a certain distance of an abortion clinic, I think is hypocrisy at its absolute highest. And I really don't want us to go down the far right. Our speech is okay, no matter what we say.
Yeah.
And everyone else will be facing consequences and persecution for anything that they do, because that seems to be what's happening in the US at the moment.
I was thinking about what free speech is, and I just wrote a little thing out that free speech at the moment, it seems to me, free speech is fine as long as you're white, Christian, strictly two gender supporting, pro-embryo, homophobic, flag-waving patriot, preferably male with one X and one Y chromosome, and if possible a gun to keep all the other types quiet.
That just shows that with freedom of speech,
that's what free speech seems to be.
Yes, because for freedom of speech to be effective, it's about power. Yeah. And it's who's got the power seems to have the freedom of speech, right? And I think that's the interesting thing with freedom of speech, is it has got divorced from facts. So should we say freedom of speech is more important if you can validate it or not? Because my other point is that Ayer in the 1930s was a philosopher, and he came up with the idea of emotivism, that actually we don't debate, we don't discuss. Every comment we make morally, we either boo or hurrah it, and that's it. So stop the boats, some people cheer, some people don't. Get Brexit done, people cheer, some people don't. And that's the whole intellectual reflection. So where we think people think about things, they may not. It's just their emotional instant response. And is freedom of speech dangerous because it's going into that arena rather than it's going into an arena of reflection, discussion, etc.?
I think the other thing with this is the Voltaire thing was about resisting authority that wishes to control people top down. And it's this thing on the far right is, right, let's use freedom of speech to attack minorities. They have this idea that there's a liberal elite, and yet when non-liberal elites are in power and take over, they're just totally quiet about it. And I think that the last 10 years, someone like Elon Musk threatening, saying that we should overthrow the British government. The British government saying people have got the right to march, protest peacefully. These far-right marches, anti-immigrant marches or whatever, that's fine. Elon Musk has got freedom of speech. And yet on the other side, that's not extended. And I think social media algorithms, the rise of Trump, Brexit in this country, the willingness of certain people on the far right, like Nigel Farage, to just lie, lie, lie and lie again. Nothing else matters other than their power, and the whole anti-minority thing is all that matters. And just to, people can come back and comment about that, but I just want to say a lot of local Facebook groups in Sefton, news, supposed news groups I've noticed, are toxic, and there's a lot of very far-right content on there. You often hear the freedom of speech thing cited. I've put articles on some of these and not got them published. And yeah, all you're hearing is far-right stuff that's being published by the people who are the admins on these groups, who seem to think that, oh, I don't like that bit of freedom of speech, so I'll suppress it. So people in power do have a lot of freedom of speech and can buy a lot of lawyers to defend theirs and to challenge others. But when it comes to freedom of speech from the other side, they're just not interested in it whatsoever. And I think that's really terrifying. It's extending around sector through a lot of these Facebook groups too.
I would also say that you're quite right about those in power have free speech, and they control everything. And also, it's interesting how we've had the rise of these people using social media. But it is the weapon. Okay, I'm trying to pick up the dog because she's having free speech.
Good. And we'll leave that in as well because we think animals should have free speech too.
Yeah.
Before we maybe move on to look at the political situation in Sefton with the political parties, does anyone else want to say anything about the free speech issue?
One thing I was thinking is an architectural term for doors, when you have double doors, called passive left, active right, is because most people in the world are right-handed. So you have double doors where the right door is the active one that you're opening with your right hand. Our right tend to be more active or more vocal, and they tend to have these caricatures representing them, like Farage or Charlie Kirk or Trump or Boris Johnson. And then on the left, you've got your more passive type people. They're gentler, they're quieter. You've got the Nelson Mandelas and the Gandhis and Bernie Sanders and the Greens. And I think that's part of the problem, is that those quieter, passive left voices don't get heard over the massive, in-your-face, active right-wing caricatures.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I also think that the money that a lot of oligarchs are putting into things like GB News, Talk TV, the right-wing press in the UK, the United States, some of the media over there is just absolutely terrifying. And I was in France last year, and I remember flicking through all the channels. I can't speak French. There was loads of talking heads channels, like about 7 or 8 with people just talking. They had elections coming up. And I remember thinking, what's up? Anyway, I got home and I read in the newspaper that apparently a lot of oligarchs are putting money into channels that had just got talking heads who were anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim. And I thought, oh, that must be what these channels are just regurgitating day in, day out. And what it does is it completely deflects from the idea of wealth taxes and reform and the climate crisis, which is now apparently all made up. And that's what a lot of those papers and those channels in this country are parroting. And it's a huge distraction piece. And that's why I think people say that liberal countries or liberal democratic countries, even with right-wing parties, they are so open that they allow authoritarians and oligarchs to dominate the discussions because they are open and passive. And I think it is a big issue that the right can wind people up and get involved in emotions and punching down at minorities who they blame for things, while the left are trying to be nice and explain things. And it really is hard to know how we challenge those things moving forward.
Agree completely that people are voting for the person and not the issue. And the left seem to try to explain and educate, and the right appeal to the heart. Mm. And out of the two, I think, whether it's right or wrong, people will go with their heart. Mm. And then we're so shocked that the Tories got in 2019. We're so shocked that people are going with reform. But it is that emotivism. It is that boo hurrah. And it is figures that are just making sure that, you know, those sound bites. I mean, the BBC, Laura Koonsberg, is it? Right. Yeah. I mean, she's interviewed everybody except the Greens leader. The BBC is state funded. So you would think the BBC, with taxpayers' money and freedom of speech, how difficult is it to say, let's interview each leader when they have a conference? And the BBC have said no to the Greens.
One of the other big things, just briefly, is that a lot of people on the right seem to think that the BBC is some woke left-wing organisation, when in fact it's quite a conservative organisation, as a lot of both sides is. It's trying to pander to the far right, and it's been taken over by a lot of people who have got conservative connections. It's like this crazy conspiracy theory that the BBC is some woke left channel or or organisation. It's absolutely ridiculous. But again, it appeals to people's emotions, doesn't it?
And also, now you don't need to debate. You say something, and I go, "Oh, you're so woke."
Yeah.
And that closes it down. So again, it's that soundbite. It's that boo hurrah. You either I love work. People call me woke. I think I've done my job. Yeah. It's great. Other people are like, "Oh, so woke." Yeah. You know, it is about who allows you to speak. Because I think the other thing is to say everyone has freedom of speech, unless you can't actually speak. We can say everything. I can carry on talking for 24 hours. It's who will let me be heard? That's the big question.
Oh, well, I've had the woke debate many times with my mum, who's on the opposite end of the political spectrum to me, and she frequently uses the term woke in order to dismiss the intellectual argument. And you just can't argue against it, because the moment you complain about anything or try and debate anything, she'll just come back with, "You're a snowflake, you're woke, end of discussion, shut down." And I've come back with her with, you know, the dictionary definition of what woke actually means, and how, you know, it's describing someone who's just aware and knowing what's going on in their community and has been used to particularly relate to racism or social injustice. But no, it's had this whole new right wing agenda attached to it, and you hear it spouted all the time on GB News. This is woke, that is woke, woke, woke. And it's just so exhausting to fight it. And that's just the problem, is you can't fight it, because who wouldn't want to be woke? I mean, it's a positive, excellent.
Do we need to get like that? People who are more progressive and say, do you know what? They're right. We can't let them dominate this bullying and intimidating way, and also closing down speech. I think woke is such a lazy term. I've heard people use it who should know better. Now, I do want to say there are people on the left as well who like to close down speech and cancel people. And that has been a problem. Yes. And I will call that out whenever I come across that. But to compare that with authoritarian right-wing governments trying to take over the world, etc., I think that's completely different.
I was going to say, I watched GB News... Right. And I think this is the trouble with GB News and Fox, is that the presenters are presenters. They're not journalists. So they are there with an agenda, etc. And they know the script to say the auto cue. But when they get the experts on, they're into trouble. Farage used some statistics that were out of date, and he's admitted that. But when they had the expert on, he said he knew they were out of date months before he used them, and then the presenters were trying to come up with something else, you know, to cover up that. And then they said, "But he's right, isn't he? When we don't know how much the immigrants have made since 2020 and he went, "No, we do, because if you go to the tax office, you can actually see it all, and these are the statistics, these are the facts." And they were went, no, and he went, "You can't argue with the tax office. These immigrants have paid tax. It's all documented." And they were like, oh.
Yeah.
So it was quite comical, right? I think that's one of the issues, is you haven't got journalists, but all the experts who come on these shows just expose everything.
Yeah.
GB News is, whenever they do get called out like that, they just cut that bit. So they'll show that live the first time it happens, and then you won't see that repeated again. But then they repeat like 1,000 times a day their own specific agenda, to the point that it becomes comical.
Piers Morgan said, "All you need is it to be aired once, and then that little clip, that's what goes around the world, and that's how you get your views." So that clip is going out a lot.
And on that note, folks, I'm just going to introduce a graphic. This is the current political map of Sefton at council level. We've got three Labour MPs, North, Central Sefton and South Sefton at the moment. Obviously, we haven't got MEPs anymore since we left the EU. We're also part of the Liverpool metropolitan area with the mayor in Liverpool, Steve Rotherham, over a wider area who has some power. So there's like three different levels, if you like, of government, formal government. Now, we used to be quite conservative dominated in recent years, particularly since 2011, just after the coalition were elected. It's been a very Labour dominated council. And this is the current makeup of it. So South Sefton is all red Labour. You've got one Green constituency, Neil Doolan, who's been on the show. And then if you go into Southport, you can see that North and South, Southport are Liberal Democrat. You've got the Conservatives on the left side of Central Southport. And then you've got Labour on the right side. You've also got, I think, two Southport community independents. One is Sean Halsall up in Southport as well. And this is the way it's been since 2024. Now, one of the Conservative councillors turned to Reform, maybe with one eye on the elections next year. And one of the consequences of Labour coming in and struggling after people being sick and tired of the Conservatives is that Reform are very much grabbing the national narrative, but also the local narrative. Now, a lot of the local Reform councils that were elected last year are struggling and are basically quite embarrassing. But again, it's that national narrative and drive of Farage that seems to be dominating. And many people are hitting a Reform sweeping in local elections this year. So this is the current makeup of Sefton. And some people are thinking that maybe Reform are going to do very, very well next year. Any thoughts on the rise of Reform locally and what you think might happen next year?
I would say we are the country that when the Tory candidate hid in a fridge, the majority voted him in, right? That's the reality, isn't it? We saw on the TV him hiding in a fridge, and then people said he should run the country.
Yeah.
That always sticks with me. I think Reform will do well if other people don't do anything. Yeah. But I think if we get everybody out voting, so I think the local elections, you get a 30% turnout. We need a 70% turnout. We need people to come out and say what they want. The trouble is going to be, if Reform are terrible, is Labour doing any better? Are the Liberal Democrats, are the Greens, are the Conservatives? What are their policies? What are they doing? And I think that's the thing is, if you get your message out, you get it clear, and then you motivate people to vote, it will be very different. But I think if we keep the status quo, people will vote for Reform because they'll think, why not give them a go? Why don't we give the five-year-old a go in the car? Give them the keys. They can't do any worse than the seven-year-old who's had the car. But with the fridge thing, wait and see with this country.
Just that graphic that's on now, one of those Conservatives of the four has now become Reform. And then the rest pretty much stands. Laura, what are your thoughts about Reform and their national and apparent local rise?
I mean, for me, it's hard not to be incredibly biased. I mean, obviously, I'm a Green Party person. I've previously been a Green Party councillor, so my views are going to be sitting in a very opposing realm. Aside of that, I'm also a second generation immigrant. I'm married to an immigrant. My child is a second generation immigrant. And Reform's policies on immigration are terrifying for me personally. So if they are to get in, they're going to extend the amount of time that you have to live in the country before you can apply for citizenship, which would potentially impact us. And they're looking at deporting immigrants literally from anywhere. So, I mean, I think that a lot of people who are voting for Reform, they have this image in their mind of what an immigrant is. And it's this person who, it's like some young man with dark skin who's just arrived on a boat. It doesn't occur to them that immigrants are literally anybody who's coming in from the outside who is not British. My husband is one of those, and my family will be directly impacted by their policies, despite the fact that my husband is a lecturer at a university in Liverpool and is a highly qualified tax-paying individual who is just an asset to this country. But still, it really concerns me that people just vote for them because they're scared. They're voting for them out of fear. They're not voting for them with any thought.
Yeah, and I think that the other issue with the whole reform thing is, as David said earlier, the Conservatives really damaged the social fabric, the economy of this country. Johnson, Truss, and their divisions within the Conservative Party. Austerity before that. Labour have come in and tried to be all things to all people and to be economically conservative. Oh, yeah, we won't raise taxes. Da, 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 da. I honestly think that other than Keir Starmer's first Prime Minister, I mean, he's won a few Prime Minister's questions because Badenoch is so bad, but his first one was about doing public service and he had these ideas. I honestly cannot imagine it going any worse, what then happened. Do you reckon he had a good conference because he actually spoke about a few things and landed a few blows as if just saying the right thing is important? But Labour locally, the local Labour Party seem to be backing the National Labour Party as well. So when people in Sefton Council have raised concerns about some of Labour's policies, winter fuel and things like that, the local Labour Party in Sefton have said, we're united with the National Party. This might be coming from Peter Dowd, the MP in South Sefton. I don't know. But it hasn't helped the local Labour Party that they have not distanced themselves when that's necessary from the National Labour Party. And that is really, really... I can't tell you how much opposition to the winter fuel changes the way on the local Facebook groups and what a self-inflicted wound that was by Labour, but also by the local Labour Party by not distancing themselves and then looking like fools when Labour changed it. So for me, the local Labour Party are behind the National Labour Party when instead they could distance themselves a little bit if they wanted to. And I think that's not helping Labour locally either.
I would say that there is a very strong anti-Labour feeling in Sefton because people are still not happy with their lives, the poverty, the employment prospects, etc. And, you know, they're looking for answers. So the answers need to be changed. So I would agree that Labour, if they're going to be re-elected, needs to do a lot more than just rely on the traditional vote.
Yeah.
Because people are thinking, well, you've been in power. We've had a whole Labour majority for many, many years. And I think, sadly, I go back to this emotivism. If things are bad, people want change. They boo or hurrah it. That's it. They don't look any deeper. Because I'm worried about the education policy of reform. They've had some inner reform conflict, but Nigel Farage reckons that a lot of the special needs conditions are fantasy. And if you get rid of them, then you get rid of the funding crisis, right? So that worries me that so many children who've got legitimate SEND issues will just be erased. Secondly, there's a teacher shortage in this country. There are currently more teachers qualified who aren't in the classroom than in. Teachers are leaving the profession. The top demographic for leaving are women aged 30 to 39. They're just going. And if you read Reform's education policy, it doesn't even address that. I don't think they even know that there's a shortage of teachers. They just want to make sure patriotic history is taught. But for that to even happen, if you wanted it to happen, you have to have a teacher in there. So they're going to get rid of the immigrant teachers. They're not going to get any new teachers because it's such an unattractive profession at the moment. So I think all you're going to do is fail another generation of children. But people will happily vote reform because they think, oh, change. And then they'll go, I didn't realise I was voting for this. When the people, I know someone who voted Brexit and lives in Spain, and then said, what do you mean I can't have free health insurance in Spain? Because you're out of the EU. She said, I didn't vote for that.
I think that's the big problem with the reform vote, is that it's a lot of anti-politics. It's like the Brexit thing got a lot of people out, like, do you know what, I'm going to lay a punch on the establishment or whatever. Like, the reform thing is like, I'm angry with the traditional parties. I'm going to vote for them. I don't care if they upset loads of people. I'm just doing it because they're strong on immigration. You can have a pint with Nigel. And in fairness to people, well, actually, not in fairness to people, you know, in Nazi Germany, there was no alternative press. But people are actually seeing this all the time on social media and in particular media if they access it. And they're not hearing any other messages. Look at some of the reform councils, the performances. I mean, I read about it in the Byline Times. Absolutely appalling what they've done and how they've failed. And it just become like a mockery. People resign and all kinds of nonsense going on. And people are going to vote for reform because they're angry and because they want to, like, blame the traditional parties and because it's just an anti-politics vote. We have had Neil Doolan on from the Green Party. Great guy, very independently minded. Now, Laura, you're a former Green councillor. What do you think of the national picture for Greens at the moment with Zach Polanski? How are you feeling about that?
Feeling positive. I'm quite hopeful. He's a very charismatic guy, and I think that that's a good thing for the Green Party to have someone who can perhaps go up against someone like Nigel Farage and actually give as good as he gets. All the attempts to find negative press about him have just sort of resulted in quite amusing anecdotes. I think that there's not much you can say against him. I hope that this can bring about change. And obviously the figures at the moment look incredible. Since his taking on the leadership, the numbers is, I think, nationally, it's gone up by over 120%. The members to the Green Party. So yeah, it looks really good. I think we're the fastest growing political party currently in the UK. So yeah, that's promising. But obviously, we've got a long way to go to meet anything like the numbers of the big two.
Good, and I think that Zach has been a great example of what you can do when you've got a good speaker with a good personality. He's also very progressive. He's talking about wealth taxes. As far as I'm concerned, the big issue in the UK at the moment is inequality. And I listened to Michael Heseltine, former Conservative minister. He's very pro-European. He sounds quite progressive. But I listened to what he said are the key things that we need to do. And he said, we need a strong economy. But he didn't once mention inequality. And someone like Zach, he's actually saying, listen, I know it's hard for you. I know that people are struggling. And he's really, really getting that message out there. David, you recently interviewed Mike Prendergast from Sefton Conservatives. What's your view of the Conservatives locally and nationally at the moment?
Well, I think Mike was very, very honest. He said reform don't have any policies and people should see through that. He hopes that the Conservatives will regroup and focus. And he is one for the economy, right? Grow the economy, because then everyone's got jobs, everyone's happier, etc. Happy people don't cause conflict. He wants the councils to do less. He didn't think they should have bought Bootle Strand. They should have just focused on council things, right? But he did say that two things I remember from this interview. One, he said the Liz Truss debacle was embarrassing. The party did themselves no favours. The infighting, how they handled it all, was just dreadful. And then he said, whether you're right or wrong, when it comes to the polls and people vote, the vote has the final say. Yeah. And he said they didn't want the Tories last year. Because democracy, in the end, is the vote. The majority go with reform, then that is democracy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about the National Conservative Party at the moment? Because Kemi Badenoch seems to be really struggling.
Well,
they're really low in the polls.
I think two things. One, spelling the word Britain is not difficult. If you're watching, just everyone got a goodie bag if you went to the Tory conference, and it was all about how wonderful Britain was, but it was spelt wrong. I think she is there as leader because she is this feisty character who people say, if I need someone in my corner, I want a feisty character. However, I don't think she has the tact and the intelligence to actually lead her party. And I don't think her party want her. Because usually the big talks at the conference are actually how they're getting rid of her. But no one wants to get rid of her yet. But I don't think she's doing any favours at all. I would say that the traditional Tories are very divided. And then, of course, you've got the career politicians at Westminster. Lee Anderson's gone to Reform, etc. They're driven by money and power. So you've got the Westminster, I call them the gangs of Westminster, the ones doing the wheeling and the dealing for their own financial empires. And then you've probably got the ordinary Conservatives who have a different view. This could be the trend. Boris killed off the Tory party. Keir will kill off the Labour party. Nigel will kill off Reform. Where do we go then?
Terrifying. I think that the Tories are in free fall. Obviously, you've got, she's a culture warrior, quite gaff prone, isn't she, Kerry? You've got people like Jenrith, who's trying to out reform. And I don't think that's going to work for the Tories, particularly with their economy. They used to be considered someone good on the economy. That's no longer saying it. I thought Mike, you could tell that Mike is a traditional Conservative. He was obviously quite frustrated with the National Party. When it comes to the Lib Dems as well, we've got 9 seats, I think, in Sefton. Let me just check that.
Yeah,
9 seats. They're led by John Pugh, used to be the MP for Southport, North Sefton. And they've got Ed Davey, they've got about 70 seats. They seem to be doing quite well. But here's one of the big problems with all this. The Lib Dems, basically, they have less of a whipping system than the Labour and Conservative parties. The Lib Dems are using a bit of NIMBYism and they're using local debates to win certain seats. And they are a big threat to the Conservative Party. But I think locally, the Lib Dems, I've always found them to be quite sensible people. I remember speaking to Richard Hands and John Pugh and other Lib Dem councillors when I was a teacher up in Southport. We worked with them on certain things and they seem quite sensible and reasonable people. But is that the problem, that they're not getting that cut through nationally the way someone like Farage is? Are they one of those left or progressive or centre political parties that is nice but doesn't really get that cut through? Any thoughts on that?
I think it's their legacy. I think they were a good, strong party with ideals, and then in 2010 they were offered power and they went into partnership with the Tories. And sadly, we got so many that the austerity began, and they will argue that it could have been a lot worse, but they were there making sure it wasn't as bad. But they lost so much support because they, for the first 5 years, that's their legacy. Lib Dem in power, 5 years of austerity, and I think they lost a lot of their actual party support, had an identity crisis, and now lovely people aspect. I don't think, right, that the Lib Dems, if they're going to recover and be a real political voice, they need incredibly charismatic, strong leaders, and they need to sell their message to the public.
A whole generation of students like myself that were students at the time when Nick Clegg and David Cameron cozied up, and I think that generation can't forgive them for their turnaround on the student fee situation.
Absolutely.
And I think they're not very memorable. They are a little bit just a party of meh.
Yeah. I think Mike Prendergast, John Pugh, Sean Halsall of Southport Community Independence, Neil Doolan. We've had the leaders of those three. I know Neil's the only one. Sean's come on. We're hoping to get a Lib Dem on soon. The Conservatives have been on. They've got a very important job to do in holding such a big majority party to account, particularly on scrutiny committees where Labour can dominate even the scrutiny as well. So they've all got a very important job to do locally. People tend to vote on national themes. South Sefton has always been a very strong Labour stronghold. But I think what you've hinted at there is how Labour and the Lib Dems, they haven't really got that kind of zest or drive or popularity that the Greens seem to be able to tap into at the moment, even though they've got quite low seats. Is the big danger the threat of a divided vote on the centre-left that allows reform in, even in local elections? So I know that Ralph James, who's a friend of the podcast, stood as an independent up in Sefton Central last year, and Labour on tone in the general election. But there were thousands of votes for the Lib Dems, thousands of votes for the Greens. The Conservatives had a half-decent turnout, I think. And in elections where everyone on the right is going to be voting for reform, are we going to divide the vote on the progressive left and let reform in? And again, that's down to the electoral system we have. So are you worried about that moving forward? And we can make this the final point if you want.
Yeah, no, I would say, because I am interested in your party, which is the Jeremy Corbyn party. Would I join that? Would I join the Greens? And it is the split vote. But what I'm more worried about is the apathy that people will say, what is the point? We voted Tory, we got screwed. We voted Labour, we got screwed. Reform, oh, I can't be bothered. And so many people are disconnected with politics that I wonder if the biggest turnout will be no turnout. Ooh. So like 40, 50% of people will stay at home and not even bother. And then you will get a minority, and it's the minority past the post. And I would agree that probably in those circumstances, the rival parties will have an impact.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a big problem on the left, isn't it?
If you get rid of, if you tackle the apathy and you get people voting, I think that will be different.
That's why we need to get people out on the ground, talking to the locals, talking to residents, finding out really what their problems are and telling them this is what politics is. If you don't understand or you don't care, you're feeling apathetic about it, it's when your bins are collected, how they're collected, whether that pothole in your road is sorted out, whether or not you can buy a second home. Everything that affects you individually as a person is decided by these big boffs up on high, and you can decide who they are to some extent. That's why I'm with the Green Party, because we're not whipped. We're individuals. We aren't told what to say. We are producing our own politics, and we're just a collection of people who come together who feel similarly. And so that makes the party a little bit wild, a little bit unruly, a little bit anarchistic. That's what you want. You want that freedom. I do have this hope. I have a hope that we can convince at least some people to vote for the party where the grass is always greener. It's the Green Party.
Yeah, just to declare, I'm in the Green Party myself. I try to be as objective as I can. I know David said interested in your party, but I think it is a big problem, the left criticising themselves over small differences. And I don't just mean the left, I mean the centre increasingly nowadays, because there's an organisation called Best for Britain, and I followed them in the last general election, and it was the first time he did it, and many people on the right were very, very unhappy with it. They actually said to people, if you want to get the Conservatives out, here's who you have to vote for in your constituency.
Yeah.
And I thought that really helped. But the Labour Party, I think Keir Starmer, you know, the guy behind the scenes, what's his name? Morgan McSweeney. I don't know who's to blame for what's going on. They just seem to be struggling. They have inherited a bad situation, but I just think it's that they've really struggled. And divisions locally and nationally, because of our voting system, I really do worry about the future in terms of populist parties and the far right coming in. So yeah. I just think that's something that we need to be very worried about.
Yeah, I would like to see at the next election more people voting so we don't have the apathy. I would actually pass a law saying everyone had to vote and you had a category where you could just tick, I do not believe in this political process. But everybody in the country has to actually go and register and vote, because I think everyone gets a say in how this country is run, and also we're all affected by it, so it shouldn't be a poor turnout. And secondly, I would like people to educate themselves, so if they're going to vote Tory, they know why they're voting Tory or Reform or Green, Labour, right? Because they've read the policies. What I don't want is this emotivism, which is people voting for one sentence, you know, and then being shocked. So I think as much as we criticise the politicians, we need to individually take responsibility and say, I am going to educate myself, and I'm going to encourage other people to be responsible and to take elections seriously.
Yeah.
That's the problem. How do you do that? How do you convince people to educate themselves? Because the majority don't. The majority of people do not read the policies. They say, oh, I'm voting Labour because I've always voted Labour, because my dad voted Labour, etc. Yeah.
Have the difficult conversations. Do it with patience. Ask more questions to the people. And do that. It's draining and it's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, because getting back to the free speech, if people want to vote Tory, right, then we have to respect that. We might disagree with them, but we have to respect it, right? But we need to make sure that people aren't voting out of ignorance. And if they can, if people could list 10 reform policies, but when they can't and they just go, oh, it'll be a change, that's a dangerous vote.
It is. I think we do need reform of the electorate system. And I think we need to have coalitions, because I think people should get what they vote for. I think if you vote for a particular party and they get some representation in decision making, I think that'll get more people out. Yeah. I do think some level of electoral reform is important where every vote counts. And as you say, maybe people should be compelled to vote at some level. But I do think we need more people like Zach who do have cut through.
Yes. And I also think perhaps it's better not to just have one central person. Perhaps that fixation on one person to lead and sort out the country may, you know, you need a committee, you need a group, we need a village to raise everyone.
Right. Thanks, everyone. Listen, I think we could keep talking forever. So thanks for coming on, David. Well done to Lara for coming on for the first time. Spoke really well. She's got her own radio show, which we'll tell you about at some point as well, which you should check out. So I'm just going to do the music and then do the ending. But thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Lara. Thanks, David. And enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.